1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Hey, welcome to the program. Thursday instead of Wednesday, and by now you know why we decided to push that up a day, or back a day. I don't know what that's called. Anyhow, it's Thursday instead of Wednesday. Neil Bradley with Ed Marlowe, and last night we learned what we knew was coming, and that is that Ja Morant is headed to the NBA, officially declared last night, and no surprise to anybody. Nice little event. I thought it was handled very, very well by Ja Morant. Had his family there with him and head coach Matt McMahon, Ed.
Yeah, just looking at this tweet, honestly, from Matt McMahon. Here it is, February 3rd, 2017, not too long after a Murray State men's basketball game. There's Matt McMahon next to T. Morant.
Wow.
2017, senior night for Ja Morant.
So did that pay off for him, you think?
Yeah.
Go there?
2 years later, here we are. Unreal. I think it'd be really funny for us to just not talk about him going to the NBA after delaying for a day. But no, it's crazy. 24 months have passed, and we have seen Ja Morant from a numbers perspective go from 12.5, 6.5, and 6.5 to 24.5, 10, and 5.7. You know, more steals, more blocks, better at the three-point line. Not a shock that he's declared to go to the NBA. More in awe, honestly. There's no shock and all awe because, I mean, he's going, and he's likely going to be a top three pick. I think there's an argument for him to be a number one pick if the right team is there. That needs a point guard, but it's like I told somebody yesterday, you don't go wrong with either guy. If you go with Zion or if you go with Ja, and I know we'll talk more about this as we get closer to the draft, I think either one helps you in the long run.
It depends on the team need, too.
Right.
I think that 100% depends on that.
Yeah, but dialing it back to what happened yesterday and on Wednesday night, you knew it was big when the Athletic breaks it. You know, and then the ESPN follows suit, and kind of we're left here waiting. Like we knew it was happening. You know, like we knew it was a matter of time. It was just a matter of what was the timing. Was it going to happen before the banquet, after the banquet, closer to the draft? You know, was it going to happen in the early stages of NBA declarations? And you know, he joined a long list of guys that declared yesterday. And announced for the draft. So, you know, people have talked a lot about how shallow this draft is. I don't know. I'm starting to really think that, you know, maybe some diamonds in the rough later on in the draft, but, you know, the first round is going to be really interesting, and now Ja Morant's part of it.
And his, you know, he really took off. I think Dave, in his story that he had the release, talked about, you know, it really taking off. The Racers, I thought, were pretty thin at point guard past Morant. A lot of unknowns because Daquan Smith, we knew then, okay, he's hurt. Not sure his status. Will he be able to play any this year? So you didn't want Morant to get hurt. And you look out at Racer Mania or whatever they call it, and he jumps over a dude. Like, okay, that was cute. And then he jumps over two and then three. Then it's like, Matt, stop this. He gets hurt. I mean, we're losing our point guard. And look at the numbers. I mean, that's what, 12 points a game. 6.5 assists or whatever the heck he had last year.
Yeah.
We can't afford to lose that, having no idea what was about to happen. And this continually grew. I realized, you know, the games at SEC schools, he was tremendous, kind of blew up then. But the night where I think it took a different leap was the Racers had defeated Eastern Illinois. And again, some more crazy stuff. You know, he has the dunk, has the ball that goes straight up in the air and through the hoop. And I think we were doing some work at the hotel, and my son texts me and says, they're doing something on Ja Morant right now. I'm like, okay, probably, yeah, highlight. So we flipped the TV over there in the hotel lobby. It went on for like 8 or 9 minutes on Ja Morant from Murray State, a team unranked. Not ranked, you know, like top five. No, they weren't ranked. And this continued to go on and on. He was, you know, Van Pelt, heck, you know, there's no need rehashing it. But at that moment, I thought, he is, you know, you hear all the projections. He might be a top 20, top 15, top 10. It's like, okay, if he's getting this much publicity, they really believe he is legit. And from that point, it just became incredible. You know, they have had a security guy to travel with us. And then you just go look online, Ja Morant video, YouTube. And I don't know how many it ends at, but I went through 5-6 pages, whatever it was, and saw no end in sight. He is all over the place and a legit star.
Yeah, I don't really know how to follow that up other than just by saying that I completely agree with you. I think for me, I knew that he was going to be a legitimate star after what happened in Alabama. And Dave Winer and I were sitting right next to each other when he hit that dunk. And I'm still, neither one of us got a photo of it. I was so mad. Like, mad at myself as a journalist for not being able to do it. But I don't want to say that it was a garbage time dunk because it really wasn't. Technically, if they get the dunk, get an inbound, get a foul, you know, there's about 12 to 14 seconds left. They're still playing.
A shot.
There's a shot at it. There's a less than 10% chance, but there's a shot at it, perhaps a steal tie, take it to overtime type of deal. Anyway, I'm basically trying to get ahead of the game. I'm tweeting some things, you know, this, you know, here comes the score, it's 78, 70, so on and so forth, and Racers are down by a couple of possessions, not looking good, great effort, that sort of stuff on Twitter, and I'm making some notes in my notebook, and I feel like I'm done shooting. The game is virtually over by sense of the definition, and then he just comes down with this rebound and just full speed ahead, comes down the lane and in front of 40 scouts and 6,000-7,000 Alabama fans, give or take a few, he thunders down over their defense and two guys get out of the way. Like they wanted no part of it. It wasn't like they were trying to stifle him. They were like, oh, he's coming and we can't do anything about it. And that to me, it wasn't even so much the dunk as it was the exclamation point to that game. You know, 38 points, the 5 assists, the rebounds. Yes, he had the 10 turnovers, but in front of 40-plus NBA scouts and executives, including Draft Express, Jonathan, you know, Givony, and a couple other guys that, you know, Mike Schmitz, these guys that really know the game and know what teams are going to be looking for. You know, I talked to Givony that next morning. That's when it happened. He was like, oh, yeah. He was like, no doubt, this kid is a legit star. He's a twitchy athlete, changing directions at will against an NBA-esque, as far as length and size is concerned, type of defense. Yes, the turnovers were an issue, but that was very early in the season. Teams were throwing 3-4 guys the kitchen sink at him. He still managed 38 points and could not be stopped. And that's when, you know, that's when I knew, from a mentality standpoint, this was changing for him. And that's the thing. I knew that he was going to be a draft pick, you know, probably in the first round after the Chris Paul camp.
Right.
But the Alabama game, I thought, just completely changed that trajectory.
That moment for me, the dunk, I remember this, seeing it, wow, that was great, and hearing the roar of crowd behind me. And I thought, man, I didn't know we had that many fans here. To look back and find out it was Alabama fans, standing ovation, going nuts. Wow, did you just see that? And that became kind of what we saw basically everywhere we went, on the road. At home, yeah, but on the road. When you're able to win over the other team's fans, NCAA tournament, the Florida State band in the other end zone, he goes in, posterizes the dude, and they're like, it's got the girl with her mouth open. It's like, you basically represent basically 90% of the people who've watched him. That's kind of how we've all looked at some point, like, oh my, what did I just see?
Yeah. I told Josh Moore this a couple months ago for the Lexington Hero Leader when they were working on a story. I just said that he was a can't miss circus act, and that every game he might have a line that you're just kind of like, oh well, whatever, 9-7-4, you know, still really good, but not a great line. But he's, you know, in his eyes at least, probably would grade it lower.
Yeah,
and he's still in every single game. And I honestly, I've thought about going back and metering it just to look and see, just notes. And I have lots of notes anyways on all the games. But there was one moment in every single game, even like the Spalding game,
yeah,
where he had a moment where it's just like time slowed down and he did something absolutely ridiculous. It did not matter. It did not matter when he came on the court, and we're already talking about past tense now, because but it's just part of it. When he stepped on the court this season, you just couldn't take your eyes off of him playing basketball. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the rest of the team.
No.
You and I have had to talk a lot more about the rest of the team. It's our job. It's part of it. There are some really good players on this basketball team. But when you look at Morant and you watch him move across the court and just do things that you just didn't think were possible, that was the kind of thing to me that really drew my attention to him. Like I said, he could have had a 30% shooting night, 3 or 4 turnovers, not really shot the ball well, you know, and maybe even made a few mistakes, but every single time he stepped on the court, there was a block or a steal or a dunk or something that just was like, wow, the talent is there, and we're watching it here in Murray, Kentucky.
Yeah, and there at the end, over 9,000 to watch his final game against Austin Peay here in Murray. And I don't know if I've discussed it here, but I've talked with some of our fans who ran into other fans that they didn't really know. Where are you from? There are people coming from some dudes drove up. I think there were 6 of them in a car from Huntsville, Alabama, to watch Ja Morant. They had no dog in a fight. They didn't really care about whether the Racers won or lost or Austin Peay. They wanted to see him in person. I mean, you had the region, I think, captivated by it. And I think that was a night where people went, this is his last game. There were no high school games, fortunately, because they played the regional tournament, I think, the next day, championship game. So it was a perfect storm of great attendance, and they just kept letting them in, over 9,000 packing the CFSB Center. And it was tremendous, a great send-off. And, of course, what a ball game to send them out on in that Austin Peay game. And then the Racers roll into Evansville the next week, the win 2 more, have a Marquette game that people are still talking about. Kind of ended on a sour note against Florida State, but even in that one, it was still Ja Morant doing things that people leaving him the head scratching. And, you know, I think the head coach there at Florida State, he said it best. Sometimes you try to plot how to stop the unstoppable, paraphrasing, and you forget about the other guys. So he took care of the other guys, let Ja do his Ja things, and they were able to get out with a victory and send Ja Morant packing. And I know we talked Florida State if they had continued playing like that, but they got stopped in the next round.
Yeah, they seems like they cashed out all their threes in Hartford.
I think they did it.
Part of that was Gonzaga's defense and just the size that they present, but a lot of that also, Florida State does not shoot threes with that kind of regularity, and that's kind of, I don't want to call it an anomaly because basketball is basketball.
That's what it is.
Anomalies happen, but I know you and I've already, you know, we've undressed the Florida State game and talked a lot about it, but just very briefly, you know, I still think Leonard Hamilton's comments, very humbling. What a coach, first of all. But I really do want to go back to that. You know, as much success as Ja Morant has had, you really have to give this coaching staff and the guys a lot of credit, because you don't get 331 assists if you don't wrap Morant with the weapons that he needs.
You're right.
The low block guys who can really score in the post, the corner guys who can knock down the three, you know, your Tevin Shaqs, Javion Eaves, you know, Breon Whitley, Mike Davis even had a few threes this year. That you don't give him, if you don't give him the kind of weapons that he needs to be successful, if you don't get the weapons necessary to build a successful college basketball team, you're just not going to win. I know that that just sounds so elementary. But this team did an incredible job. I don't even want to say shielding weaknesses, but just maximizing strengths.
You're right.
They did such a great job. Morant was so good at finding corner passes off the drive. And Tevin is so good from the corner. Javion Eaves, so good from the corner. Shad Buchanan turned around a three-point percentage that was, for lack of a better term, abysmal in non-conference play. Abysmal to his standards, sub 30%, and completely turned it around in conference play. McMahon talked ad nauseum about it, how, you know, a lot of guys really tank in that position when they come out of non-conference play and they're like, man, my three's just not falling. I'm going to stop taking it. And yeah, Shaq probably still took some ill-advised threes, but man, he really made them in a great clip in conference play.
And some big ones.
Yeah, huge ones. the two biggest ones against Jacksonville State, back-to-back fashion.
Don't make them.
Don't make them. We're not talking about.
Yeah. May have gone to the NCAA tournament, but may not have. I don't know.
I don't know either.
And the best thing is not ever leave it up to a committee.
Right. And, I mean, you're talking about cojones.
To take them.
One pair. Pair of cojones. To hit back-to-back threes. Oof. You know, and that's the kind of, those are the kind of KJ Williams, the oops, the shots, the athleticism that this team had. I felt like there was we're all three-dimensional. We're not playing Mario here. This isn't Paper Mario. We're not 2D individuals. But I always like to think of basketball as three-dimensional. And the verticality that this team had, they didn't play on the floor. They played in a 3D cube. And they were like, there was a fourth dimension of basketball, and Ja Morant helped him reach it.
And one other thing on Ja Morant, he hardly ever talked about himself at any press conference.
No,
the only time
he
said I had too many turnovers.
Right.
That was it.
Which he had a lot.
Yeah, but he never would say, he never said I had 20-something points. Did you see the pass I made? Did you? Never. It was always, can't do it without my teammates. Always team first. And Buddy, you think that doesn't go a long way with your teammates because they hear the clips too. Some may say we don't pay any attention to that. They pay attention to that. And so, they hear it.
And so do NBA scouts.
Yeah. They like that. But he truly is, and you've seen this. I've seen him just as happy when he has 13 or 14 points and has the high assist total. He really does relish handing out assists. And somebody in the NBA for some team is getting ready to pile up a bunch of points because of that kid.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I don't really know what his uptick will be in the NBA. Obviously, he's going to be surrounded by even more talent. You know, this was a talented Racer basketball team. But let's be fair. The next team that he steps on, the worst NBA team, let's say he goes to the worst NBA team, which is how the lottery works. You know, obviously, he could go to the Phoenix Suns, or he could go to the Cleveland Cavaliers, or Chicago Bulls. The list goes on and on. The Dallas Mavericks may be able to make a move. Maybe Magic Johnson gets in there and makes a trade. You know, he did come see him in Evansville. We get where the NBA draft might be headed. We don't know what team he's going to get. Maybe the Memphis Grizzlies sniff in, wanting a backup to Mike Conley. Who knows? We'll see where that all trickles out by June 20th, and maybe even earlier. You know, as we get to the lottery, but, you know, we're talking about a guy who's going to immediately transform an offense, even if he plays 20 to 25 minutes a game. You know, even if they work him in slowly, he's going to, when he steps on the court, he's going to change the game. And they've already talked about, Mike Schmitz keeps comparing him to a mix between Trae Young and De'Aaron Fox, the speed of Fox and the passing of Young. Well, those two guys are having a pretty, pretty solid rookie campaign in the NBA. Or Trey is, and De'Aaron in year two. That's a pretty solid comparison if you're going to recent guys and you know, spur of the moment, you know, right now guys. Those are two pretty good guys to be compared to. And if Morant even does 60 to 70% of that, that's going to be big for him moving forward.
I want to talk a bit about women's basketball. A commit this week. Can't become official until signing day, which I think is that next Wednesday? Is that the first day?
She's just a junior, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But, I mean, it can't become official until then.
Right.
And Hannah McKay, who a junior this year, so she still has her senior year at OCAT. But I watched her, and she was tremendous, actually, the last couple of seasons for Owensboro Catholic. But a really good get, and, you know, she... When you tweet out the picture in your Murray State uniform and has committed by it, I'd say it's about as solid as you get. So she'll officially make that on signing day. But yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, you're talking about this is an OCAF team. Let's stick with the team element here that went 29-8 and finished in the Final Four. There's a big reason why. She was their leading rebounder, leading scorer, shot 55.7% from the field. Also made 11 of 28 threes, so she can stretch out a little bit and pull up from distance. And she is about a 75% free throw shooter.
As a junior in high
school?
As
a junior.
Okay.
We talk about that 10 to 15% increase that most players take with work ethic and commitment, and they become better and become more of a focal point of offenses as they grow and develop. Yeah, she could be a 16 and 10. She had 6.9 rebounds this past season. She could be a 15-8, 16-8 type of kid her senior year, and you hope that you know, you jump to college and you make the transition. She could be a 10-6 type of player right away.
Now, she could do a little recruiting for Murray State. I don't know, because she's on the junior all-star team that'll play Indiana. Also on that team, Charlie Settle, who is a Murray State target. She's a target of a lot of schools, but I don't know where Charlie will end up. But she's poised. She'll be a Miss Basketball candidate, I assume, next year from Region 1.
Absolutely.
And really has made great strides year over year over year, and I expect probably more improvement for next season.
Yeah. First of all, those just came out this morning. Yeah. That's going to be a great game. Yeah. It always is. Kentucky-Indiana game on the boys' side and the girls' side is always a really, really good game. But I think maybe Hannah McKay's little nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more, say no more.
I don't know. Yeah.
But, I mean, Hannah McKay's, it's a great get. You know, I mean, even if she comes in and doesn't contribute right away, but gets stronger and learns the game, there's a skill set here that you and I, you know, have noticed. Quality rebounder, quality shooter, quality at the free throw line. Doesn't really have any deficiencies. Great size. And Okath was the Final Four team last year.
That's... And lazy people don't get rebounds. If you have two rebounds a game and you're huge, you're probably not going after them.
Yeah.
It does take some heart and effort to get rebounds, even if you're little. But if you're big and go get them, that's why I said you don't have to be big. Yeah, but if you're big and you're going and getting rebounds,
you
still have the advantage over someone who's little and going and getting rebounds.
Yeah.
So heart is big. Big person with heart will trump little person with heart on the rebounding battle.
Yeah.
Just kind of the way that works.
Size does matter once in a while.
Just the way it is. Now, you know, the quickness and stuff, that's another story on some other level. So I did notice that we had talked about this a little bit, but Murray State has posted its roster for next season. Janika Griffith-Wallace not on that. Brianna Crane not on that. Nothing official coming out, but notice they're not listed for next season. So a couple of spots will be open, it looks like.
Yeah, that definitely changes a little bit of the dynamic of women's basketball. I thought Janika and Brianna were extremely pivotal coming down the stretch to help the Racers make it back to the OVC tournament for a second straight season. It's tough because, you know, Janika had really turned it on as far as talent was concerned. You knew it was there. The athleticism was there. But between the ears, she was starting to make some really, really big-time shots.
Really?
But it does sound like she is going to be transferring. And the same with Brianna Crane. I think Brianna Crane's was more a home, but potentially just wanted to get closer to home.
It happens.
And that's hard to combat. You know, you don't ever want to say, hey, no, you can't be closer to home. That's just part of basketball and part of really all college sports.
And life for jobs, too. Man, it happens.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to be closer to home, and I get that. And that may be the case for Janika. I'm not really sure. But that is two positions that immediately open up that both of them had several starts this past season. Both of them were kind of steadily growing as sophomores. As leaders, that's a tough little bit of a setback for Rochelle, but I will say it does open up new opportunities, and that's, to me, I think that's the silver lining you take with it, is that it opens up opportunities for people that want to be here, and that's never a bad thing.
Feel good about that the women's team, what's returning. However, they can be intimidated, and I'm going to – this little story, Tuesday night, we're at TAP. We're playing trivia. There's Macy Turley, Macy Gibson, Lex Mays. Think a couple other players are in there. Started playing trivia. They saw who they were up against. They bailed out pretty quick.
Oh,
so it basketball, they're really good. Not sure about trivia skills. They didn't last too long. You know, when you're going against the master. By the way, we didn't place first, second, or third, but nevertheless, Star Wars night next Tuesday. I expect you to be there with us. Right?
No,
What?
I don't want to just dominate. I just.
No, on the team is what I meant, not against us.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I wouldn't. If you showed up, I would leave.
Star Wars night's next Tuesday?
Yeah.
I don't know. I might. All A softball's next week.
So what? They'll continue playing.
Yeah, they will.
Just have them send you the scores.
I got to work something.
Oh, you can just work from there.
We'll contemplate this.
One other note, because I was asked about this. Here's my son texting me already. So let's put this to bed. Daquan Smith in a boot last night.
Oh, oh my Lord.
Okay, all right. So I and I understand concern. He had a little, just a little, without disclosing anything, probably some HIPAA deal there. Talking with Daquan, he said just a minor thing. He's on in the boot another week, and he'll be back at it. I think he sort of had maybe an inkling there might be a job opening at one of the guard spots in Murray State. Turned out, so he's
going to be two openings. I think Shaq's graduating too.
Yeah, so there's two openings right there at guard. But it's just a procedure, I think, to promote the healing. He's not out for 3 or 4 months or anything like that. So he'd be right back at it. So just wanted to get that out. He's okay.
Yeah, I wanted you to talk a little bit about that because people freaked out.
I understand. I get it. But he's okay.
But I mean, everybody went to the announcement last night, and instead of like reverting, and I get it, people are already thinking about next season for obvious reasons. Everybody's so excited. It's part of it. I guess I should, but I'm like, you know, I'm listening to John. I'm listening to his family, and I mean, I'm not even kidding. Like 10 minutes after the celebration and the announcement, I get home, I'm writing my story, whatever, no one's going to read this, so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, I get like 2 or 3 messages. What's wrong with Daquan? I don't know. Like, I'm my mind has gone to 14 different other storylines,
right,
you know. Hey, as you know, you're having to shift focus. We got baseball and softball and spring sports and, you know, and basketball still lingering, of course, and I get it. You know, it's our jobs to kind of find out that kind of information. But, you know, wish Daquan nothing but the best. I don't want to bother somebody when they're trying to rehab and you know, refacilitate their bodies and get ready for the next season. But I it's good to hear, because I heard the same thing. It's good to hear that it was just a minor procedure, that he's going to be able to move forward with all basketball activities as soon as possible.
That's from him. It's not a third party source.
That he's going to be fine. The world is fine. Let's chill. By the way, Racers probably going to be fine next year without
what?
John Morant.
We're not going to lose 20-25 games, you think?
The world is not over. Like your tweet this morning where you were just like Popeye, Marcus, Singleton, like you just listed all these guys.
It goes on.
It goes on.
We still managed to get a win or two here or there.
Rest in peace, Benny Purcell and Howie Crittenden, but things continue to meter on after those guys. You know,
we continue making problems for the CFSB Center, trying to find out room to hold where the banners are going to be.
Right.
Those are the problems.
And the jerseys being retired.
Continue to cause for this university.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. Now they got to go find where you hang two more.
Yeah.
I don't know where.
It's absolutely, it's borderline preposterous and inappropriate.
But there are other schools, they've found a way to deal with that, and that's not win the championships. Or you put golf, track.
Right.
Tiddlywinks, checkers championships, those banners are in their gym.
Tap 216,
whatever.
Trivia champions.
Trivia night. Yeah, I would put that.
Yeah, that's that. This is a great problem to have.
Yeah.
And you and I will talk a lot about this over the summer when things get really slow and no one's listening. That from a recruitment standpoint, you want to take a look about, and I use NASA as my example. You know, like
too
this
much.
Is this. Yeah,
no, go ahead.
No, you're right. This it's going to Mars. You know, we're off into space and shooting into hyperdrive. You take a look at the recruitment just over the last 8 years, 10 years. Cannon, Payne, Stark, Miller, Juwan Long, Aska. Ed Daniel, like it just goes, there's just a list of guys. I haven't even mentioned half the guys that have gotten here and done well over the last decade. There will be some good recruits coming in. There will be developed talent. There will be nice JUCOs that help out. And the team's going to be just fine.
And don't get caught up in the, oh, he's not a 2-star or 3-star guy. Remember the guy we just watched last night.
He had no stars.
Zero. But he gave a shout-out to James Kane, who happened to notice him in the bag gym and noticed that day, hey, this kid's a pro.
And again, I'm gonna keep referencing this. James Kane didn't have a bag of chips. He had barbecue. Spartanburg, South Carolina barbecue. Said it was the best barbecue he's ever had.
Yeah, I bet
obviously,
it was.
Obviously, for more than one reason.
Yeah, I imagine so. A bit of football continuing with spring practice. Any developments from there? Haven't had a chance to go in a couple of days.
The main thing that I think I'm really noticing right now, I'm actually probably going to go to Saturday's practice. I'm going to go to one practice a week for the next 3 weeks leading up to the spring game. Went to one practice last week. Two things. One, Breon Sanctius, going to be playing football.
Yeah, he told me that personally because I said, have you been measured for your shoulder pad yet? He goes, no, they haven't found any yet.
So. Yeah.
They're still looking.
Yeah, they're still looking. Ripped his gloves on the first day because the gloves were too small. Mitch Stewart told a really good story about it yesterday on Wednesday. I thought it was really, really funny. The only cleats he could wear were Jesse Blackburn's cleats.
Oh, my
gosh.
Those were
the only cleats big enough. So you think about how big Jesse Blackburn was.
Yes.
At tight end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 15s and 16s were the shoes that he wore.
Those
are the shoes Breon Sanctius
wore. He's at my wife's school. He's like in the
he's in Mayfield. Yeah.
The detention thing. So doesn't have any problems, as it turns out.
Oh, nobody messes with Jesse Blackburn?
Okay. Yeah, I'll behave.
I'll behave.
He doesn't have to do anything. He just has to be Jesse Blackburn.
Yeah, he also he also helped out with Mayfield football this past season. And
they did okay.
Well, yeah, they did. They did pretty solid, you know. Played for a state championship for the umpteenth time, but we digress. Yeah, the Breon Sanctius, again, I don't want to put too much stock into it, and I think Mitch did a really good job. They're expecting tepid success.
Yeah.
He's been playing basketball for the last 4 years, but there is a football pedigree inside of him.
Yeah.
There is an interest, and that interest is mutual. And I think it'll be fun to watch and see, even if he only has 5 catches for 100 yards or whatever. I think it's interesting, and I think it's cool, and I think it's fun that he wants to be a part of that.
Yeah.
The last Murray State basketball player to play football was probably Fatso.
I think so.
Yeah. And kind of the same role, big body, you know, blocker, tight end, wide receiver, you know, kind of deal. I really looking forward to seeing what he does. Not going to put too much weight on it. You know, like, oh my God, is he going to be a 50 catch, 600 yard guy? Like, no, that's not the way this offense works. Last year's leading receiver was Malik Honeycutt, top returner as well, All American returner. And so, you know, you're taking a look at this is a guy that's just going to help with the rotation of wide receivers. But I think the big thing that Racer football needs to look forward to this spring is the implementation of the offense around Preston Rice. They've given him, the redshirt sophomore, the keys to the offense. Brendan Bognar is going to be back up. It's a pretty deep quarterback room. And then they've just got to work on, I think, from a defensive standpoint, one, how they're going to stuff some of the redshirts into the rotation, two, you know, replacing some of the key guys. But I'd say Mitch said this on Wednesday, and I'm inclined to agree with him. Their deepest spot, despite the loss of Quincy Williams and Kenny Wooten, is the linebacker position. You take a look from the transfers spot. They picked up Juwan Long's cousin, Alec Long, from Memphis. You know, Tay Carruthers, JUCO transfer from Itawamba. You know, you picked up Terrence Corbett, a hybrid-type guy out of Troy. These are all guys that should be able to contribute at this level almost immediately. That's not even, taken back who comes back from last season. You know, AK-47, Kokulnakis. You've got Kendrick Caddis, who I thought had a solid season
last year
coming in, you know, from Washington State and JUCO. And so you've got a really, really deep core of linebackers. Biggest thing in practice, I think, that'll happen over the next 2 or 3 weeks, will be them working on the defensive line. And you've talked a lot about that just even last year, how important it is to get some sort of technique and rush inside the gaps to stop the running games of opposing teams. That's where I think a lot of the impetus in practice will be in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Couple of spring sports, and both doing really well. Softball, not a good season last year record-wise. They are really making up for it this season in OVC play. They go into the weekend in second place. I'm actually going to the games, I've been told, by my granddaughter on Saturday, so I'll be there.
Looks like your weekend's build.
Play Tennessee Tech, and then I'll be told where I'm eating, so it's going to be, that's the way that day's going to go. But I want to see if Hannah James can get any better than, perfect game. Where do you go from there? She had a perfect game, Ed. Third in history at Murray State.
The perfect game, she followed up with an extra innings, one earned run, 10 strikeout loss from Friday, which is what I saw. You know, so it's my fault.
Wow.
Their one conference loss, my fault. I'll take it.
You did. Okay,
it's fine. You. Just like Belmont.
Way to screw it up.
Yeah, I wore the tie to the Murray State Belmont game. John Morant got hurt in the first minute and a half.
What are you doing?
It's my fault.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I will take the blame. But Hannah James, East Jessamine, superstar athlete there. She was tore ACL her junior year in a basketball injury. Good athlete, good all-around player. Comes back, finishes second in the state her senior year in strikeouts behind this really, really good pitcher. You might not have ever heard of her. Montana Fouts that gets outs. I just like that rhyme. Plays at Alabama.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good East Carter pitcher right there for 4 years.
I like the rhyme, though. Yeah. That's great.
Montana Fouts gets outs. Yeah. Well, Hannah James wins games.
Not as good as DeFore for DeThree, but that's close.
I'm trying.
Okay.
I'm working. You're my inspiration. But Hannah James is really good at softball. You're going to look at her pitching record, and you're going to be like, 8-8. Whatever, Ed. You don't know what you're talking about. No, I somewhat know what I'm talking about. Her sub-3 ERA as a freshman. She's top 10 in multiple categories as a freshman, by the way, in the pitching statistics across the OVC. She's playing lights out. The defense is playing really well behind her. I think the one thing Kara said last week that she was kind of frustrated about was that the offense isn't coming around with her, that every time she goes out there, she gives them a chance to win. And you take a look at, like, last Friday, your only loss in conference play. Tennessee State was winless at the time in OVC play. Came away with a 2-1 win in extra innings. Again, James had one earned run, 10 strikeouts, wow. One walk. It's like, and the Racers had 10 hits. It's like, but they didn't scrape together more than one run. It's like, well, we gotta put that together so that we can give Hannah James more wins, but our team more wins. And you know, those are the kind of losses that kind of you look back at the end of the season, and let's say you finish, well, they play 22 games in conference play.
I think so.
Yeah, what happens if you go, let's go 16-6, but 17-5 would have gotten you the 2 seed? That's what Kara was getting into. She was like, you know, that one loss against a Tennessee State team that, you know, was winless in conference play at the time might cost us a seed later on down the road.
Right.
You hope not, and you just work forward and you move forward and you learn from that. But then, you know, it's kind of like what happened with football this past year. You take a look at the tough start against SIU, and you take a look at the really, really tough loss at Tech, you know, you're looking at a 500 or better season and, mm-hmm. and perhaps a top 2 to 3, you know, finish in OVC play. Not to take anything from the football team, but that's when the season ends, you look back and you're like, oh, man, that if we just had one more oomph
yep.
in that game,
yep.
it changes the season. But, you know, they've moved forward, and Hannah James obviously moved forward because she had the perfect game against Belmont in that doubleheader sweep on Sunday.
Racer baseball, they've yet to lose an OVC series. They were off this past weekend. I mean, off, that's really rare, but no games. But they're back at it, and they play at Tennessee Tech, I guess, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But a good test for them at Tech.
Yeah, it's a pivotal swing. And I know last night was a tough, tough loss to a good-hitting Missouri State team. I think they lost that game, what, 15-10? They were still playing that when we left the Morant announcement. And so, but the one thing that I will have to say is that, you know, you take a look at the top of the pitching rotation for Murray State, it's been fairly successful. They've gotten some good relief in OVC play. Midweek games, I find midweek games to be really interesting.
Yeah. You
know, for all teams, softball and baseball combined, because especially at the college level, is it's really your midweek games are a great chance to just air out your entire roster.
And that's what they do.
Yeah, exactly. Try everything and see what's going to work, what's improving, who's getting better, so to speak, who's actually, you know, improving as the year goes along, and then let's use them in the weekend and see, are they ready for what matters? Don't get me wrong, wins are wins, and whenever you can get them is important. But as you well know, and listeners know, conference play, conference games, and conference series are the most important things with college baseball and college softball. So you use the midweek to, you know, rest your pitchers, get better in other areas, test other bats, see who's healthy, and move forward into the weekend.
A little bit on the Final Four. That's coming up this Saturday. And then what a weekend we had, though, in terms of three of the four games were like, I think I still might have fingernail marks in my chair. They were tremendous, absolutely tremendous. It doesn't matter whether you like or dislike the outcome. I know it does to the fans of those teams, but as just a neutral observer, man, I loved it. It was a lot of fun to watch those.
18 points, Neil. 18 points decided four Elite Eight games. It's the lowest, smallest margin in the history of college basketball, in the history of NCAA tournament. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Michigan State's win, that three in the final seconds to take the lead. You want to talk about huevos.
Yeah.
That's a shot that you're either the GOAT or the hero in that moment. Those are the kind of shots that make a tournament atmosphere what it is. And then you've got to give a lot of credit to Auburn and the way that they played without Jumo Okeke. Like, they were basically left for dead.
And they can't make threes in the game. You thought, you can't win. You don't have him. You can't make threes. You're cooked. And they still won.
Yeah.
Not sure how. I watched it, and I'm still not sure. Well, yeah, they had that Harper guy, didn't they?
Yeah.
He just slithers in. We've seen that happen before.
Yeah, Jared Harper.
He may have done that little here in Murray.
Never heard of him.
Got it one, and then
oh wait,
he little slithers in there, and he's fun to watch though.
You almost slipped a dirty word into that.
Man, he's fun to watch.
Oh, he's unbelievable. No, Jared Harper
probably wasn't as fun to UK fans, but when you step back and think about what you just saw, he's really good.
Step back and think about what Auburn has done this season. They were left for dead. They were healthy when they beat the Racers, by the way, 93-88 in maybe the best two-game series that I've seen. I know Auburn took both of those games, but last year's atmosphere, I have talked about this until I've been blue in the face. Last year's atmosphere with Auburn and Murray State, best atmosphere almost in the last two seasons. I know there weren't nearly as many people at that game, but that was 6,500 fans that were hungry, you know, and there were... You come out to that 12-4 start, it still gives me chills, man. I could not hear anything at the first media. Bruce Pearl couldn't hear anything either. He had to take a timeout to talk to his guys, and they were like huddling in because they couldn't hear how loud it was. Same thing down there, but that was a healthy Auburn team. They get into SEC play, few injuries, little dings, things like that, change their rotation, change their chemistry. They weren't nearly as good. They didn't win an SEC regular season title like they were predicted to do. And I say predicted relatively loosely. Kentucky and Tennessee were right there. But, you know, then you got into the SEC tournament, and they've been hot ever since.
Yeah.
And what a run they're on. If you want to talk about a, quote, Cinderella, they're not a Cinderella, but they are the Cinderella of this Final Four. And that's no disrespect to Texas Tech and the blue bloods of Michigan State, and then I'm gonna give Virginia that redemptive story. They're a blue blood in a way, but you know they've bounced back from that losing to a 16 seed last season to make a Final Four under Tony Bennett. By the way, his system works. Made the Final Four. That's how hard it is, though. That's how hard it is in the NCAA tournament to do this over a consistent 2 to 3 week. The grind is unbelievable.
Yeah,
and these four teams. A lot of veteran presence. They're here for it.
And I know I heard a lot of fallout. Calipari loses in the Elite Eight again.
Oh, Lord.
And, let's take a look at...
Lifetime contract.
Here's a lifetime contract.
Online one.
For losing in the Elite Eight and sending more players to the NBA. But what I want to take a look at the wins and getting to the Elite Eight. That's really good. A lot of schools, they'd sell their soul just for that. Legally sell it is what I mean.
Some illegally,
but it's hard to do. It's hard to do with veterans. It's really hard to do with young players. There is no perfect formula. But Kentucky, what fans, I think, for their program need to know, you're in the national title conversation virtually every year.
Every season.
And that's about all you can expect to do. He could go away from the one and dones and go to veterans, and that's still all you're going to do. I don't know if you'd win any more national championships or not. It's tough to win.
The amount of parity in college basketball, we aren't going to see the wooden years anymore.
No.
We just aren't.
Well,
it's not happening.
Yeah.
You're not winning, what, 8 in a row? 9?
Well, he
40?
Had kind of a clear path to, I mean, just take a look at the way they used to do it. The West region.
Right.
They were the winner of the West region, you go to the Final Four, and there was no competition for the most part out there once you got out of the Pac-12. There is now, the way they do it, they spread it out, balanced regions. That's why it's so tough to do. You can't be from a weak region, per se, because they're going to ship teams in and make it strong.
And I'm going to say there's a fair argument. SB Nation put together a really, really good breakdown of this a couple years ago, and I just recently rewatched it, and it just got me thinking again. There's an argument that the NCAA tournament should honestly be reseeded after two rounds.
I hate that. Don't do it. Never do that.
I'm just saying there's an argument for it.
I live for the upsets.
That's fine. I do too. But I'm just saying there is an argument for it if you're going to actually reseed.
I mean, it's like,
little
guy, you've got to win. We're not going to reward you for the win. We're going to make it more difficult for you.
I'm just saying there is an argument for it.
Yeah.
But you're right. If you want to talk about absolute unpredictability and
chaos.
That's
what makes it great.
Yes.
That is what makes it great.
Yes.
To me.
Yes, I agree. We're not, it should be difficult to win an NCAA championship.
And it is.
And of the three teams in this Final Four, or of the four teams, three of them have never been here. Despite the blue blood discussion. I love it.
There are
people complaining about it. Oh, this is bad for CBS. There's no Zion Williamson. Like, get over it. Like, if you don't want to watch the NCAA tournament, that's fine. Turn your TV off. The rest of us are going to turn it on because somebody's making history. And yeah, it might be Tom Izzo. Maybe, he's got a long list of success here in the Final Four. Maybe it is a Tony Bennett or a Chris Beard or a Bruce Pearl. Maybe somebody's coming away with a national title that you didn't think was coming away with a national title. But that's what makes sports so freaking great. Because everybody kept talking about at the beginning of the year, well, this is Duke's. Duke's has got it. Duke's just got it. No, they don't. No, they do not have it. And Zion Williamson and his whole team, R.J. Barrett and all those guys, they're not playing. Cam Reddish, Coach K, they're not playing for a national championship. I'm not necessarily relishing in that fact. I understand from a TV rating standpoint that everybody wanted to see them play. Yeah, don't care. We are seeing four teams that have never been in this situation before. Three that have never been and one that definitely has. And they're going to be duking it out for a national championship.
I see what you did there. Duking it out.
It's special to me. I think it'll have more viewers than people think. Of course, we're going to wake up next Monday and it'll be like, no one watched it. 1% of the nation did. And I'm wrong. And that's fine. I admire being wrong, honestly. But I think people will watch this wanting to know, man, who's going to come out of this?
Me too. I think so. I want to watch. All right, Ed, we've taken up enough of both of our listeners' times. We appreciate both of them listening. And
thanks, Dave.
We'll try to do it again next week.
And I guess...
I can't think of the other guy's name.
Oh, I'm sure it's E-Fred.
The trail runner guy. He's always listening to
him. He's always listening to
him. I can't think of his first name, though.
Hey, he's awesome.
But we appreciate it. Thank you so
much. That's three listeners.
Oh, we got three. That's right. Man, we're up a third. So we can go out and say, our listenership is up a third.
Up 33%.
That's it. I'm going to pay you more money for that, Ed. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.